You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.
Without further ado, Patty Trania joins us now. You can see her work on SI. Her and I have been dear friends for, man, Patty, it's been over a decade.
Yeah, it's been a long time, but, you know, listen, you've been an important part of my life, and I'm very thankful to be able to call you a friend.
Oh, that's so sweet. It's so sweet. So folks who might not be aware, Patty covers the Giants and has for several years. And when I first made my way here to New York, it was one of my first jobs. I was working for the Giants broadcast team. And so I got to know Patty extremely well. So I'm thrilled and blessed that you can join me on the program tonight, because I just feel like more than anyone else, you are so knowledgeable when it comes to the salary cap and what teams need to do. Obviously, reports today, the Giants, they cut Zeitler, offensive lineman, and now they're in a situation where they were below the cap. But from what I understand now, they're $3 million above the cap in regard to the $182.5 million. Explain why they had to make that decision to cut Zeitler today.
Yeah, so, I mean, the cap was set at $182.5 million. That was the floor set league-wide. But different teams, the reason why you're probably going to see some teams having more cap space than others is because of the carryover from every team. So the Giants had something like, I think, a little under $3 million of carryover from 2020 that they were able to contribute to their cap space. And it just, you know, between franchise tagging Leonard Williams and just the state of their cap, particularly in the top five, which is very cap-heavy, and we can go into that if you want in more detail, but they didn't leave themselves with a lot of room. So that clip you played with Dave Gettleman talking about restructuring and kicking the can down the road and causing pain, you know, you look at the Eagles, you look at the Saints, you look at the Rams, those are all teams that have, you know, in part done that, and that's why they're in the situation that they're in today. With the Giants, you know, they've done that in the past as well, where they've, you know, restructured contracts. Kevin Zeitler's was one of them that they restructured a few years ago. And really, you don't want to do that, especially when you're acquiring a contract off of a trade like they did with Zeitler, because what happens is the signing bonus gets charged back to the original team that dished it out. So when you inherit it, the idea is to keep that prorated signing bonus column clean. And the Giants weren't able to do that. And as Kevin Zeitler's number increased, so did his total cap hit. And it just got to the point between that and the fact that the cap floor was so low that it dipped for the first time in over a decade. The Giants really didn't have any choice, I think. They could have restructured him, but he was in the final year of his contract, and they just decided it was just best to rip off the bandage.
Very, very, very interesting, because we know how much Dave Gettleman values his hog mollies, right? And another guy that I'm really intrigued by is Nate Solder, who we know opted out last year because of COVID-19. $16 million, that is his cap number. You know, if they cut him, you've got $10.5 million in dead money. What do you know, what do you anticipate happening with Solder, Patty?
Well, if I were the Giants, what I would do with Solder is something similar to what the New Orleans Saints did with Drew Brees. I would say to him, look, Nate, take your time in deciding whether or not you're going to retire. But in the meantime, we're going to lower your base salary. His base salary is $9.9 million. We're going to lower that down to the veteran minimum, which for Solder is $1.075 million. Right, so right off the bat, the Giants can save themselves about $8 million plus if they take that step. Now, if Solder does decide to retire, or the Giants decide, hey, we're going to make you a post-June 1st cut, then they can save additional money. But, you know, the trick there is, you know, you're right. If they cut him now, they're going to have a huge dead money cap hit. But if they make him a post-June 1st hit, they can save some more money, but if they lower his base salary, as I described before, they can save some money right off the bat.
Interesting. Another situation, obviously, is with Leonard Williams, right? They tag him, but obviously what they want to do is they want to work out a long-term deal with him. What bring us up to speed on Leo.
Yeah, so Leo has a tag of 19.351 million, which is actually a 120% increase of what his tag was last year. So because he was tagged 2 years in a row, rather than get whatever the tag was, and I forget what the number was for defensive tackle, but he had to get 120% increase, which is how we got to that higher number. What the Giants are going to want to do, and this will help them if they want to keep Dalvin Tomlinson, if they can get Leo down to like around 12-15 for that first year, and it's not going to be a true 12-15 because he's going to get a signing bonus, which is going to make the contract average out over the years to, you know, like about 19, 20 million per year. But if they can get him down to about 12 to 15, then I think they can fit Dalvin Tomlinson in if they can pull something off similar. So there is a way for them to get both of those guys back. It's going to take a little finagling, and quite frankly, they have to get Leo done before the start of free agency, because if they don't get him done before the start of free agency, I'm pretty sure they're going to lose Dalvin Tomlinson.
You know, from what I understand in talking to, you know, our mutual friend, Paul Dottino, he has explained to me, because I'm not in the walls, in all honesty, because of the pandemic, right? None of us are in the walls anymore. But he has explained to me that Leo Williams and Tomlinson and Lawrence, these three are as thick as thieves. And him and I were talking, we did a little rewind, and we were talking about the Brandon Jacobs, Ahmad Bradshaw situation, where Brandon Jacobs went into the offices of Jerry Reese at the time and said, listen, I'm willing to take less money as long as you take that money and you spend it on Ahmad Bradshaw, because we don't want to separate. We want to be here together. These three defensive players are as thick as thieves. So do you see any type of, you know, and I hate to call it a hometown discount, but it sounds to me like these three guys want to be here. They want to play for Joe Judge. They want to be a part of this defense. Do you see them working with the Giants to hopefully make sure that all three of these guys remain on the defensive side of the ball?
Well, I remember that Jacobs and Bradshaw story that Paul told you about. But to answer your question, I could see that happening. Leo has said that it's not about the money for him. Now, you know, let's face it, we all want to get paid our worth. So, you know, I'm not saying Leo's a liar, but we're not going to work for free, obviously. But, you know, you look at the chemistry between Leo and Dalvin and Dexter, and you're right, the three of them, they're the three musketeers. And to the thought of breaking those three up, it's just, you know, I don't think anybody wants to see that. I don't think the players want to see that. Now, will it mean that, you know, Leonard Williams walks in and says, hey, you know, I'll take $5 million less if you use that to sign Dalvin? He might. I mean, will his agent let him? I don't know. I'm not really sure how that dynamic is set up. But I do know that Leo has given a lot of credit to Dalvin in the past about how he does the unheralded work, the dirty work that helps him, you know, be the player that he can be and help the other guys be the players that they can be. So, you know, if you look at the culture that Joe Judge has built and how they all look out for one another, I guess I could see a scenario where that happens. But at the same time, you know, they're not going to work for, you know, a deep discount. They are going to want to get paid, and they're going to want to get their fair market value. But maybe that keeps them from going, you know, for figures that are over the moon.
Again, Patty Trania joining us here on 98.7 ESPN. You know, I just had Cynthia Freeland on the show just a second ago, and you know, we're both in agreement. I phrase it as the haves and the have-nots this season when it comes to salary cap space, right? And it just seems like, not that any of us could have anticipated a pandemic in 2021, but man, has the Jacksonville Jaguars, the Colts, and the Jets really just like walked right into it, right? Like these are the teams that are going to be able... Right? Like these are the teams that are going to be able to offer like a buku amount of money where other teams are not going to be able to offer much, and are going to have to not only that, but shave players. Like right now, like Galladay is the best wide receiver that's on the open market right now. But like I'm hearing that the Pittsburgh Steelers are going to have to cut Juju Smith-Schuster one day soon. So, you know, how unique of a year is 2021 going to be Patty, like in looking at the teams that have a lot of the salary cap space, you know, are you like, how much of an advantage is that this season compared to most?
Well, on the surface, it's an advantage, but it's what you do with it. I mean, if you spend it on guys that, you know, do you remember the Dream Team by the Eagles a few years ago, how they spent like, you know, it was going out of style, and what did they get them? They got them nothing but the salary cap heartache. So it really depends on how you spend the resources. I mean, it's great to have it, and it does allow teams, you know, the advantage of having so much space is it allows you to identify and sign guys early that you might want to keep before they get, you know, their market values really inflate. Like, how much do you think the Giants would have loved to have been able to sign Leo last year had he not been on a tag after, you know, especially when they saw he was starting to have a really good season? I bet they would have given anything to have been able to extend him then and avoid this whole thing. But of course they couldn't, like I said, because he was on the franchise tag. So it does depend on, you know, what you spend your money on, how you set it aside. I think a lot of teams would like to retain their own talent because they invest so much in draft picks and in the development of those picks. And if those guys work out, that's how you want to build the foundation of your football team. You don't want to have to rely on free agency, because when you do that, A, you're getting a guy who's developed maybe in a different system with a different philosophy. B, is that guy going to be a fit for what you do? Is he going to be a fit for your locker room? And C, you almost always you're going to end up overpaying. And, you know, for an example of that, look at Nate Solder. I mean, Nate Solder's a terrific human being. Don't get me wrong. But the Giants had to overpay for Nate Solder. Why? Because they swung and missed on Eric Flowers at left tackle. So when you get in a situation where you're desperate and you overspend, that's when you get into cap trouble.
So I'm hosting a draft show this season with Steve Verderosa, and one of the phrases he says is, don't draft hungry.
Exactly. I hear
right. Don't free agency hungry. Don't free agency hungry. Right. Okay. Patty, before I let you go, you're so knowledgeable when it comes to the Giants. Just out of curiosity, any thoughts in regard to the Jets? They've got such an amount of draft capital. They're the second biggest team in regard to cap space. I just feel like they have aligned themselves in a situation where they could really do some damage. What give us some insight in regard to what you think the Jets are going to do in free agency.
Yeah, you know, I'll tell you what, even though the Jets had to suffer with loss after loss, to be them right now in this offseason, they're going to do this rebuild, hopefully the right way for the sake of their fans. They have over $69 million in cap space. After carrying over $28 million from last year, they have the second overall draft pick. I think they have 10 draft picks. The average cost of their top five players is only $10.1 million, which means they're not top-heavy at all. I think that their top two highest-paid players right now are Jameson Crowder and Marcus May, and Marcus May just got the franchise tag. So the Jets, I think they can, you know, they can really make some noise this offseason and build the franchise the way they want to. And really, that's what you want to do, Anita, is when you start over, you have to say to yourself, okay, you know what? We're in rebuild mode. We can't have one foot on we want to compete and one foot that we want to rebuild. You have to take a side and you have to stick with it. You know, there's no happy medium. The Jets took a side there and they said, okay, look, we're going to have to throw away a year because, you know, they didn't win last year. They knew that the season was a wash. So they decided, okay, we're going to go all out and we're going to build up these assets and have them available and use them to build up the franchise the right way. So I'm very curious to see what they do with the draft picks. They can move around now if they want to. They've got the coveted number two pick if they want to trade down. They've got all this cap money. I mean, I think Jet fans are going to be very, very pleased and excited with what their team does this offseason.
Patty, cannot thank you enough for your time this evening, my friend. Thank you so much. It's really great to hear your voice. It's great to hear that you're healthy. And again, blessed that you joined us this evening. Thank you, my friend.
Always a pleasure.
You're listening to Chris Carlin on 98.7 ESPN.